All My Hummingbirds Have Alibis is the third in a trilogy of works entitled Music for Three Imaginary Ballets. The first, The Key to Songs, was written 8 years ago. The second, And the Butterflies Begin to Sing, was written 3 years ago. And All My Hummingbirds Have Alibis was written last year and premiered at the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival in the summer of 91. The way I've looked at this CD-ROM is opening a whole vista for me. It's like the beginnings when I first did Silver Apples of the Moon on a record, thinking of the record as an actual medium. The CD-ROM as a medium is almost untouched at the moment. It's for everybody who has one, they know that there's not much available, and for everyone who doesn't have one, they don't know anything about it, since it's not a very usual thing to have in one's home. But the potential for this medium is enormous. And in working with this, I discovered a couple of very interesting things that I imagined was going to be there for the record, which turned out not to be true, which is that the CD-ROM acts as a kind of new chamber music, chamber art, because it's not just music. And the reason it works better than the record is that the record went to the arena of bigger, better speakers, bigger, better living rooms to make sound more realistic, so that you were outside or in the tuba player's chair listening to an orchestra in the middle of the orchestra or whatever, to make this kind of virtual reality that was beginning with High Fidelity. And so the intimacy of chamber music was disappearing, whereas the original clavichord or the string quartet, which were the original chamber music kind of instruments, really don't do well in big auditoriums. They do very well in chambers. And here I thought we were working with a medium, the record, which would be chamber, and then suddenly we got reverb that turned us into a grand hall, and suddenly we're in the Rockies, and we're going over Niagara Falls, and we were no longer in our living room. So the very fact of the record took us out of the living room. Now, the one thing about the CD-ROM that can't take us out of our living room is that we are stuck to that little video monitor. The monitor with the information on it is part of our computer. We can't get more, at best, than two people in front of that thing. And there we are sitting in front of our monitor, and the intimacy of an image, which is too small to see beyond a few feet, causes this to be an extremely intimate, almost one-on-one experience. And that's really what has excited me, is the possibility of this intimate home experience from my studio to your home, and for very little money. We have moved a work of art from one space to another space, and we get this intimate experience. In fact, here I am talking to you. I've been working with a number of techniques, as most composers have over the years. In the 20th century, especially the second half of the 20th century, have had to more or less start from scratch. In the case of Mozart, say, when it was thought that Mozart could hear, or I think he said that he could hear an entire work in one moment, or the notion that he wrote the entire overture to Don Giovanni in one night, is mind-boggling to a 20th century composer, especially to anyone I know as a 20th century composer. It's a really difficult thing to imagine. But when you think about it, he wasn't composing the way most of us have composed in the 20th century. What Mozart was doing was essentially improvising. He was improvising on a set of rules and a set of things, so that he actually, well, if he could write in real time, which he probably could, they were writing longhand after all, practically. So he could literally write, and it's not that big, an overture, and if you got all night to do it, it's not all that much. What Mozart had, he didn't have to create tonality. Tonality, which is more than just a scale or something, is a whole system of thinking, was already there. And the rules by which it went were no longer rules. They were part of the thinking. They were vocabulary. It wasn't, he didn't have to invent words. The words were all there. He didn't have to invent the context of sentences and all of that. It was all there for him. Not only that, but if he was writing a sonata, for instance, the structure was there for him. He had to invent a tune, but what he did with that tune, as inventive as it might have been, was not that different from a jazz player working with a tune and improvising around it. And jazz players do a whole piece in one sitting. That's what it is. It's improvising. We can't do that because we don't have tonality. We don't have a system. We've grown up in a world where we believe that that relativity, at least we used to believe that, is the prime mover of everything. Relativity says, and it was the downfall of the liberals, relativity says that this is good and so is that. But so is that and so is that. And there's no hierarchy, there's no better, there's no worse. That's very far removed from a tonality system where one says, first there's this, and if there's that, you then must do this. And if you don't, it'll be a surprise to everyone. That was in a world where Newtonian physics was at the height, the age of reason. In the age of relativity, we developed such things as 12-tone techniques, where every note is equal. We developed political systems that said every person is equal. We developed concepts of, like with John Cage, chance techniques, which says anything goes. Whatever comes first is just by chance. This is all formulated in this whole relativistic thinking thing that we've all grown up with, at least up until recently. I think things are probably changing now. Now, writing a piece in one night is impossible. Because why? Because we have to create systems. We have to create the concept of the context of our language. We have to create the language itself. In some cases, in cases like the imaginary ballets that I've done, we have to create the sounds. And even in all my hummingbirds, many of the sounds are actually created from scratch. I mean, Mozart didn't create a sound. He had an orchestra, and he wrote for them. I see the collage books of Max Ernst like pieces of music in the following way. You look at these novels, as he calls them, which is the page of visuals and a little poem on the bottom. And as I move through these pages, I say to myself, aha, well, beautiful, I understand. But if you were to ask me what it was, I'd have to tell you I haven't the slightest idea. And yet I really do know. And that's very much like a piece of music. If you're in a jazz ensemble, if someone plays a solo, someone says, yeah, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. I think it was Sartre who said, music is meaningful, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't designate anything. And these collage novels have that same impact. You sort of have the sense you really know what he's talking about, but at the end, you really don't. It's like a dream. That's what surrealism was all about. You wake up in the morning, you really knew what that dream was about, and you try to explain it. And if you do explain it, it sounds dumb, and most of the time you can't. You just don't know what's going on. And yet, there seems to be this kind of intuition that you really do know. And I think that's really what the language of music is about, the language of dance, and for me anyway. And so I looked at these novels in that way, and that's what really attracted me to these novels. What I saw in this particular Ernst novel, collage novel, A Young Girl Dreams of Taking the Veil, is the kind of play between the male and the female that he has in there. It's something which I think most of us have come to understand as a major problem in our lives, one of the major problems of our lives, as trying to deal with our relationship to other human beings. We are trying to break down the hierarchical relationships. We're trying to understand women and men and some kind of equality that we've never understood before. We're trying to understand other cultures that we've never been able to see as equal. It's easy for us the men in an advanced world to see ourselves as better or different from other, but to see it blended together is a major challenge, I think, in our time. And I see this novel as sort of dealing with that, again, in a way that's not explicit, but implicit. And so we have the male-female roles here. We have the first word, rise, by the male. Follow me, dear child. That kind of condescending quality. Yet it's enigmatic because it's done without the kind of inflection that tells you what it means. Yet it's a male voice and it's saying that. Finally, he says to her, I will you my hand and my arms that have touched thunder. And I alter the word thunder when it happens. And then you get her voice. She says, ah. And then you get a combination of the two voices. My hand has touched clouds. It's interesting because thunder, lightning, Zor, but my hand has touched clouds. What another idea. What of the great Zeus has ever touched a cloud? It was always thrusting on us in some way. So it's that kind of thing that one finds throughout that I've used in it. The two parts of the work and where the title comes has to do with the image of the woman about herself through as a result of this relationship between this thrusting man who, at one point, who says, I am God without woman, which is a strange twist. Again, I can't tell you what it means, but it means something very strong to me. She says, all my hummingbirds have alibis. And I don't know what that means, but it's certainly a beautiful idea. All my hummingbirds have alibis, and 100 profound virtues covered my body. It's beautiful, but it doesn't mean anything. Then, right after that, I start part two, and I turn it around, and I say what he says in the novel, but what it really means, when you uncover all my hummingbirds, it says, all my joys have alibis. Now we're getting down to what this actually might mean. And my body, which before was covered with profound virtues, my body is covered with 100 deep cracks. So what we have here is this external, florid beautifying of the female, but what she feels like inside is covered with 100 deep cracks. And she's had to make an alibi for every joy she's ever had. And that's the nature of how I deal with the words.